good evening. Welcome to the Solaria Report. Today it's supposed to be February 2nd, but the truth of the matter is I'm recording this on February 1st because I'm heading out on the road to Mississippi tomorrow for 2 days. And I'm Catherine Austin Fitz. I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Events, a lot going on. We have finally the web presentation for the entire wrap-up. We've done all 4 weeks. It's all up there, ready for you, complete. We'll be translating it into a PDF and flipbook, which we should have in about 2 weeks, and then hard copy. So this one took a lot of extra time. We spent so much time on news trends and stories and the scenarios because the change is underway, and we can't just say, oh, it's going to slow burn next year. There's a real change in 2017. 2017 is a transition year and big change ahead. So I really hope that that wrap-up helps you with your planning, with the investment of your time, your investment allocations, and just helping you to see through the noise and see the world. We talk in the big theme, of course, is the global harvest, because I think food is only going to get more important. The crowdfund, thanks to your great help, is successful. We have funded phase one. We're just negotiating, and we'll finalize the contract for phase one this week with the Organ Master. We're going to have a celebration lunch for the crowdfund in Louisville in early May. You'll be hearing more about that next week. I'm so happy we got it done in January because it was Joseph's birthday, and he was, as he said, gobsmacked. But phase two continues, so let's keep going because we have plenty more to go. Southern California, we will be doing an event. I'm going to be speaking there on April 20th. More on that when I have the details, but we are going to organize a lunch or an event, so we'll keep you posted. And then next week, I'm coming back to the people who expressed interest in the Australian Outback trip in 2018 with Richard Dolan and Jason Bowden-Smith. So if you want to be part of the first round to be informed, let me know. It's going to be limited to 20 people, so it could fill up quickly. We'll see. And then our prayer book is still available. Prayers for 2017. Just email, call, or send a self-addressed stamped envelope to our P.O. box, and we'll send one back there free. Our theme tonight is neocon scorpions. You all saw my who's who in the transition. I had four characters, Titanic, Turner's piggies, scaredy cats, and scorpions. And we are really seeing the neocon scorpions out in full force. You know, they don't intend to let go of privilege or subsidy easily, and they're going to be nasty about it. I spoke a lot about it with Saker in our interview tonight, and also with Jeff Rentz. We did a show. It's up on Jeff's YouTube channel, and we'll have it up on the website by tomorrow. Saker wrote an article about color revolution. He's very concerned that it's going to happen in this country, and he and Rentz and several people I've talked to are much more concerned than I am. I think a lot of the what's going on is just noise. If you look to the real money people, the people who understand money and numbers instead of the noise, what they appreciate is that the current administration is pro-business. Whether you agree with their policies or not, you have very experienced people. They know the beat of what they're doing, and they're very pro-business, both small business and large business. The recent editorials in the Wall Street Journal have been very supportive. The markets, if you're watching them, have been supported. So I think a lot of what you're seeing from media and some of the members of Congress is an awful lot of noise, but I don't think it goes anywhere. Saker's very concerned that they're trying to basically unseat Trump and get rid of him. I do agree that they're throwing mud up on the wall, but I just don't think any of it is going to stick. We're really seeing a push of people to really focus on what's real and what's important. But there are too many people who don't want to give up on their privilege and subsidy, not just in Washington, but in the whole population. And unfortunately, we've printed so much debt and so much central banking money that most people have forgotten what's real and what's not. And of course, the danger is if you have way too much noise, then the only people who can get anything done are the piggies who push for prioritization, and that's my great concern. Some of the things he's done recently have gotten very good press. The regulatory reform executive order, where he requires agencies to delete two regulations for every new one they do, and he's requiring OMB to create a budget where to limit the time and effort and cost to the people who the regulations apply to. And that is long overdue and a very welcome thing, because America is choking on unnecessary regulation. And if you look at the things that are going wrong, there are many ways to solve them, and trying to do it with rules isn't going to work. If you look at Patrick Wood's book on Technocracy Rising, I really recommend it to you. He talks about how the leadership wants to manage through rules instead of through markets and price. And I just think it's a, you know, the European Union and the United States are proving it just doesn't work. We can't afford it, and it doesn't work. Anyway, so a lot of noise and difficult to see through the noise. Confirmations seem to be going through. There's some games going around on Sessions and some opposition to DeVos. Tillerson just got confirmed, and it's very important to Trump to get his key players into position and make sure they have people behind them. We're having quite a brouhaha about immigration. The administration plopped out the executive order, the immigration rule, to stop immigration from seven countries in the Middle East, and it really wasn't coordinated well with the bureaucracy, and so you had a little bit of a mess and a lot of opposition that didn't have to happen. But let's look more deeply. What Trump is saying, no immigration from these countries until we basically get a good vetting system. But let's look at what's really going on, because there's been quite a lot of brouhaha about this one, even though if you look at who's involved, it really has far less impact than some of the other things the administration has been doing, including that regulatory executive order. First of all, if you look at the Democratic Party, you basically got Hollywood, Silicon Valley, Wall Street, and Washington, who've bought a certain portion of the population with money, either identity politics, subsidized low income, and immigrants. And it's all organized, the immigration is organized to sort of target populations into the Electoral College in a way that will allow them to win. And it's a pretty jaundiced way, because at the same time the Democrats are planning on their grassroots to be immigrants who they're bringing in, they're basically ignoring and walking off and ditching the American labor, which was traditionally their stronghold. So it's a very sort of ugly strategy. The problem is it depends on massive subsidy, both the corporations that they're helping as well as the low-income population, the identity politics. And of course, nobody wants to give up their subsidies. You have similar problems going on the Republican side with massive subsidy, but it's a different kind of picture story. So clearly the Republicans are moving to block that. But think of it as really, in this particular battle, immigrants are a front group for that 1%. It has nothing to do with humanitarian issues, the squabble back and forth. So let me give you a sense of the humanitarian issues. Congressman Tulsi Gabbard, who's our hero this week, returned from Syria. It's a fabulous interview she gave to CNN, where she basically said, look, we're financing ISIS and everybody in Syria wants to know why we're doing it. And why don't we stop? So the humanitarian issue is not to allow a small trickle of refugees from Syria to come into this country. It's to stop financing ISIS, which is what the current administration has said. So number one humanitarian issue is stop financing mercenaries and people who are doing wholesale slaughter of Syria and other countries in the Middle East. Number two, if you were going to settle Syrian refugees, someone pointed out earlier this week, 10,000 refugees, the cost of settling 10,000 refugees in the United States from the Middle East would finance resettling 120,000 in the Middle East. And so clearly this has nothing to do with humanitarian, because certainly if you're humanitarian, you'd help 121,000, not 10,000. So we have Charlie Schumer, Democratic leader in the Senate, standing up and saying that he cried at the press conference where he said this was inhuman. Now, Charlie Schumer never stood up and cried when we dropped, our effort into destroying Libya, stealing their gold, stealing their oil, getting an ambassador killed. None of that had him crying big crocodile tears, because he and his pals were making money on it. And they're making money on engineering targeted populations around the United States. but it has to do with what makes them money. It has nothing to do with humanitarian issues. And in fact, watching Schumer is one of the, it was one of the most disgraceful performances I've ever seen. It was so sleazy and hypocritical, you just wanted to throw up. So here's somebody who's gone along with financing ISIS. Here's someone who's gone along with destroying Libya, you know, and creating the refugee whole problem and Europeans' refugee problem to go along with it. And he's sitting screaming big crocodile tears over this. So, you know, this is a very dirtball game, and the noise has nothing to do with humanitarian issues. Not to say that they don't get some people worked up who legitimately are concerned about, the harm being done to the people in Syria and the Middle East, which is dreadful and terrible. But it all reminds me of the time that I was having dinner with a congressman from Texas, and they rang the bell. He was on the Appropriations Committee and had to go vote, so he had to excuse himself in the middle of dinner. And he turned to me and he said, let's face it, honey, I'm just here to protect my shit. And walked off. So I said, okay. Anyway, in the Saker interview, we talk more about it. But I want to remind everybody, before you let a civil war break out, don't fall into the trap. Anybody who's trying to encourage a civil war between this group or that group, between men and women or blacks and whites or Democrats or Republicans, all of that is simply a way, you know, what their goal is to get rid of the Constitution and Social Security and Medicare obligations. So there's nothing they'd love more than to say, well, you know, the people all wanted to secede and the nation pulled apart. It wasn't our part, so it wasn't our fault, so don't blame me. A deeper part of this wonderful story in the Economist called The Retreat. It's their cover story this week. And they usually, when they have a big cover story, they do an editorial about it as well. And you want to read the editorial and the cover. What it says is globalization is going through a period of consolidation. The local firms are getting more efficient. And the earnings of the big multinationals that have really been the juggernaut of globalization have dropped in the recent years. And the multinationals are in retreat. And I think this is part of the deeper story of what we've been talking about with the group behind Trump wanting to pull back into North America and go deep. And if you're going to go deep, as I discussed with Saker, you need the middle class. Anyway, the financial printing press is slowing down. And what we're seeing is a real we're starting, as the money recedes, the issue is who's really economic and who's not. And I think this is a healthy part of just as a bull market runs up and then consolidates back, that's what we're seeing. We've been through a wave of globalization. Now it's consolidating. It needs to drop back and cleanse out that which is not economic. And then I think globalization will proceed. Okay, money and markets. The dollar is off a little bit. It's down just a tad below 100, so it's down 2.5% for the year. Again, big question whether it will see the 100 or hold the $100 line. There's a great headline in Bloomberg yesterday that says, you know, gold up, market shock because Trump does what he promised. But all the noise around the immigration brouhaha, I think, was helping gold. TLT, the long treasury, is flat. It's up about 20 basis points for the year. The intermediate is up 3 basis points. When I say basis points, that's 0.01%. The bond, corporate bond aggregate, up 7 basis points. And junk flying at 1.5%. God knows. I'll never understand junk. Equities, the S&P now up almost 2% for the year. And the home builders almost up that much with it. Europe now up, Europe looking much stronger, 3.27, and the Germany up 4.23 strong. The developed markets up 3.71, the large caps in China up 5.65%, small caps up 6.1%, and the emerging up 6.7%. So very, very strong this year. Commodities up almost a percentage, and gold, woo, flying up 5%, and silver up 9.93%. That's just in the first month. And then oil, flat, negative 2.37. So the administration keeps talking pro-oil, which is good for supply, but not good for price. Okay, big story, of course, is the Iran ballistic missile launch test this weekend. The United States has called for an emergency meeting of the UN Security Council. The U.S. Ambassador Nikki Haley has just been has just gotten through her appointment, and so she was in position to say that the world should be alarmed by the test and is calling for unspecified UN action. The U.S. is taking the position it's against the relevant UN resolution, so we'll see what happens. But clearly, Iran was being, I would say, purposefully irritating. And interestingly enough, the missile launch test failed, so probably good news all around. The Irish Times reported that the Saudi Arabia Aramco is considering investing $5 billion in renewable energy, which really shows you again the deeper trend. This is not politics. This is the fact that solar is getting significantly more competitive and the battery technology is getting significantly more competitive. So expect the world to go to a very, very robust, resilient energy model where we're doing renewable, we're doing oil and gas, particularly gas. And the question is, will breakthrough energy technology come out? Who knows? The war on cash continues. I put up a couple stories. It's very ugly because most people don't understand where an all-digital money system is going. I put up a video. It's a short interview of Aaron Rousseau by Alex Jones. Aaron Rousseau was a personal friend of mine. I can't recommend him to you highly enough. If he said the Rockefellers said what he says, which is the Rockefellers want people chipped, then the conversation really happened, and what he's saying is true, which I do believe. So I talk about it with Jeff Rentz in the Jeff Rentz interview, and I think I talked about it a little bit with Saker, but I strongly recommend you watch that video because you need to understand how dangerous a cashless world is. It's one of the reasons I'm very concerned about Bitcoin. And I know all the Bitcoin lovers always give me a hard time when I say that, but if Mr. Global controls the pipes of the internet and digital systems, which he does, then you have to understand he's got us all prototyping digital money for him. There is a stall on Obamacare as Congress once again realizes how difficult it is to try and re-engineer something that reflects profound corruption throughout the ecosystem. So we have insurance companies and pharmaceutical companies who are all making lots of money, and hospitals and this and that. So you have an entire ecosystem of people depending on huge and hideous profits that could be subject to competition, and certainly they don't want that. And then you have a whole world of consumers who don't want to change their habits or make all sorts of choices that would be made if we were in a cash system. So, Washington's got itself in the middle of a swamp that goes from sea to shining sea, and they're really not in a position to get any part of the ecosystem to face reality. They're kind of in the middle. So they're squirming around, and to help everybody understand what's going on, think of this as sort of the healthcare part of the red button story. I put up an article that I wrote in the end of 2012, beginning of 2013, called Coming Clean Beyond the Fiscal Cliff, where I basically describe why Washington is stuck on the budget and it's going to continue to be until we bring transparency and face certain issues. So, and I think there are many solutions, but I think first you got to face what's really going on. I put up a little commentary last week called Privatization the Root, where I showed the price on bonds coming down and the stock market going up. Basically, what it says is government's cost of capital is getting more expensive and big corporations' cost of capital is going down relatively. So the spread between government cost of capital and corporate cost of capital continues to narrow. And finally, a book review last week called Hooked: How to Build Habit-Forming Products It's the next in a series we're trying to do of how entrainment and other high-powered technology is used to create addiction. I wrote one book on gambling. Another, Jason Worth, wrote a great review on pornography. And I keep trying to focus everyone on the dangers of the kind of technology we're up against. Our hero this week, as I said, is Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard. She's a Democrat from Hawaii. She went over to Syria on a fact-finding mission, came back, did an interview on CNN that's up on the website, and I can't recommend it to you enough. One of the subscribers sent that in, posted it in the comments section. Thank you so much for that. The amazing, amazing, amazing politician. That's why somebody on the website today said something about all politicians are corrupt. And I said, no, there are a lot of good ones. I don't know how they do it, but there are. She's one of them. Okay, let's go to the movies. We have a wonderful movie called The Whistleblower. It was it's made a while ago, and it was the story of a wonderful police officer, Catherine Bolkovic, who was she was from Nebraska. She was an American police officer who then worked as a UN peacekeeper for DynCorp, which is a major government contractor, defense contractor, has traditionally been the lead contractor at state. In post-war Bosnia and Eastern Europe in 1999, she was fired for efforts to stop a sex trafficking ring that was servicing and facilitated by DynCorp employees. So you had DynCorp employees basically buying and owning sex slaves. She took the story to the BBC and subsequently won a wrongful dismissal lawsuit. And it was at a similar time when a second DynCorp employee also brought a lawsuit alleging similar practices in a different part of Bosnia. So DynCorp continues to this day to be a major contract of federal, state, and local government. Off and on, I've written a variety of things about DynCorp and one of their lead investors, Pug Whitaker. I really believe their lead investor through Pug Whitaker and possibly some other investors is the Harvard Endowment, but that's we'll leave that for another time. The reason I wanted you to see this movie is my discussion with John Rappaport next week is on pedophilia as a way to create and assert political control. And it's literally a way of using control files to create people who must do your bidding. And it's much more common than people think. So I thought this would be good background. There are many aspects to the pedophilia story. And it's also slave trafficking is involved, obviously. So The Whistleblower is one good movie to help you understand how some of this works. Next week, we're going to take The Finder, which I put up for subscribers about a month or two ago, and make that public. Wonderful first movie made by a movie producer who is in our network. Wonderful, wonderful woman. And anyway, but next week will be The Finder, and that's going to be the story of a local mayor who bumps into a pedophilia ring called The Finders, which gained a lot of attention in the 90s. So two good movies to help you understand that phenomena. Our interview tonight is with a Saker. I had to compliment the Saker because his predictions about what was going on in the election being a squabble between two parts of the deep state, one who wanted to regather into North America and one who wanted to sacrifice the United States to preserve empire, was, I think, the most astute comment on the entire election and really described the competition of what was going on. So we talk a lot about what happened, what the initial things look for the administration. He has written his latest article, A Color Revolution is Underway in the United States. He's very concerned because he's seen these kind of color revolutions destroy countries around the world, and he knows how vicious they can be. I don't think they're going to be successful, so I'm a skeptic. And part of it is, again, if you look at who the people who understand the money and the finances, I think by and large they're very pleased with what the administration has done so far. and they share a very common language that they didn't have with the last administration. So I just don't think they're going to go anywhere. But it was a fascinating, it's always fascinating to talk to the Saker. And then I also put a, I want to thank you for the great links you sent, but one person sent a link of Trump's mother, Mary Trump, who was a Scotswoman, and I never realized how strong her accent was. She did an interview with an Irish singer, and so I put that up. It's up under Life, and it's a interesting, it's an interesting comment on the special relationship between the UK and the United States. I don't remember offhand if we ever had a president whose mother was a Scotswoman, although Alexander Hamilton was Secretary of the Treasury and he had a Scotsman for a father. So we certainly have a major Scots presence in the population, but it's quite interesting after you're used to seeing people like the Bushes to see a Scotswoman as a president's mother. Anyway, interesting interview. So the first comment, I got a wonderful feedback on the Blue Shield, which is the one of the devices that I use that Jason Bowden-Smith recommended to protect against EMF radiation. I'm not going to read it again, but it'll be posted in the notes, and I want to thank you again for sending that. I think that's great feedback. And I'd love to hear feedback from other people who try it, because the more we can learn about what its impact is, I think the more we'll know. Hi, Catherine. I just returned from a planning session with the local city manager's office. I met with the director of human resources. We finalized plans for a learning opportunity for my students. Our objective is to introduce college students to city government so they can observe the importance of good communication in solving local problems such as code enforcement or parks and recreation resource allocation. Startup is scheduled for March 2017. I will keep you updated. Oh, I hope you do. I'm fascinated by this. In the course of our meeting, the director mentioned the city manager wants to start a citizen academy. The purpose of this 8 to 10 week learning experience is to orient and train citizens so they can participate effectively in city government. What a fabulous idea. I would love, if somebody writes an article about this, I would love to post it. What a great idea. Since my career before teaching was all about managing and growing grassroots organizations, volunteering to help design teaching materials for the academy seemed natural. I let him know I was especially interested in space-based budgeting. Did I hear you say you were working with someone on space-based budgeting for a similar project? If so, can I join that discussion? Please let me know. I will ask them. I would love to get some help. You're the inspiration for the, and that's place-based, not space-based. You're the inspiration for these efforts. The Salieri Report supplies credible information to the class. Your colleagues, John Rappaport and Joseph Farrell, are also well represented in the semester. We are team teaching and forming students with critical thinking and communication skills they need to navigate their future. Thank you for your continued support and encouragement. That sounds fabulous. I'll try and hook you in on that other project, and it'd be great to get some help on that. Hi, Catherine. I just listened to Donald Trump's speech. Well, he might really be a Trump for America. I'm stunned at the stupidity the comments have been hearing for the last week and even today. Unfortunately, we have a generation of so-called journalists and experts that are unable to cope with novelty, never managed anything, and think they can comment on anything. Hope God keeps an eye on France. I think we're going to need it. Hope you'll enjoy and share this first evening of the new American trend with people you care for. I think it's important to remember for many, many years, the people who've run government here are process people, and they're process people, they're not price people. And so it's very interesting. So Obama was a very sort of elegant and polite person. Many people talked about how gracious he was, but meantime he gave $27 trillion to the bankers. And now there's, you know, all the pensions are underfunded and there's not enough money for healthcare. So, but I have so many people telling me, you know, that he was terrific and Trump is an evil bastard. Now, Trump is not a process person. He's not gracious. He's an entrepreneur and he's looking at price, and he is clearly, he's saying we shouldn't go to Libya and steal all their stuff and kill them, which I think is very elegant and gracious, much more important than, you know, sort of being good at process. Or he's saying, we shouldn't give $27 trillion of our money away to the banks, whatever. If you are someone like me and you're looking at the money, and to me, money is reality and words are cheap. So elegant, gracious words means nothing to me if you're giving away my retirement savings. So I look at the world much more like a price person because I was trained on Wall Street. And while I've certainly worked in government, I understand the importance of good process. And I think the Trump people, after this week, hopefully will learn a little bit more about good process. Clearly, it's not their strength. I think we have to decide what's important. And the last system, the process system, depended on gobs of subsidy. And that subsidy is, basically diminishing. There was a great memo by the editor-in-chief of Reuters to his reporters that I sent into the website to be posted and I put out on my Twitter feed. And I'm sure you can pick it up just on a search, but you ought to read it. It's very inspiring because what it says is the really quality people in the press are listening to the what I call the productivity backlash, and they're learning and they're encouraging their reporters to do the right thing. So my Twitter feed, I said, it's journalism for adults by adults. It's really terrific. Catherine, what is your take on the recent Women's March this past weekend? I'm a woman and certainly believe in women's rights. For the life of me, I don't understand this one. Your thoughts, please. I think it was a combination of many things. First of all, it was organized and financed by groups who are trying to get women and other people to front for the 1%, the Hollywood, Silicon Valley, Wall Street, Washington. So I think you have the 1%ers who've got this sort of identity politics things organized, and they've been financing a lot of these groups. Soros is clearly one of the key people doing the financing. So I think there was a lot of money to pay people to organize or to do it. And so it's a business, first and foremost. I also think there was a lot of entrainment behind it. And then you had a lot of celebrities who jumped on board. It's good for them in a variety of ways. Then I think there are real legitimate concerns on women issues, because if you look at Trump and the group around him, it really is, as Sean Hannity said, the alpha males are back. And they sort of see themselves as people who need to protect women and protect all of America, but they don't talk a good game on women's rights. And they're clearly pro-life as opposed to pro-choice, which I think is a big issue for many women. I would say it's also not a federal issue, although it is a Supreme Court issue. I also think a lot of women that I know went because they wanted to have fun. It was sort of a day out with the girls. And I also think there was part of it was people protecting their subsidy because they're very worried that Trump is going to protect or cut their subsidy. The reality is, if you look at what's happening in the money, everybody's subsidy is going to get cut because we can't afford that much subsidy, particularly after Obama gave the $27 trillion to the banks, which is why I kept beating on the missing money from the federal government or the black budget or the Obama giving the $27 trillion. And I think some of it is just a reaction to alpha male energy. Trump can say things which are offensive to women. I don't really care about that stuff because I think divide and conquer politics is the fastest way to poverty in the world. I always tell the story when I first came to Hickory Valley, Tennessee, after getting a load of the segregation and sort of the dislike between the blacks and the whites, I finally said to everybody, if you would just collaborate about the money, you could hate each other rich instead of hating each other poor. So I have, coming out of Wall Street in Washington, I just see divide and conquer politics as a loser's game. And I don't want to get into it. I don't want to participate with it. But I'm sympathetic with some of the concerns. So I think it was a combination of a lot of different things happening is once. And when you get that kind of momentum, a lot of people just join in for fun. And from the people I talked to, they had a blast. So it looked like the group had fun. Catherine, I'm 35 and I've been a Solaris subscriber for several years. I'm drawn to your ability to distill complex information, propose possible scenarios, and develop positive actions for that solution that individuals can take. You are affectionately referred to as Aunt Catherine. Inspired by the information you provided, our family investments are focused on minimizing our overhead through debt elimination and investing in our health and education. That is outstanding. Very good to hear. Once the house is paid off, I'm looking for ways to take advantage of compound interest while keeping my investments moral. Your Q3 investment screening was very helpful. Through my research, a good option is to participate in dividend reinvestment programs for a company that fits the Solaris screening. You're right, that's an excellent way to do it. But you need to make sure you're monitoring the company. Just make sure you're monitoring the company. For the companies I've reviewed, it seems that this requires direct registration of shares. I realize there are mutual funds that allow dividend reinvestment, but I don't think I'll be able to fund a fund that fits all the criteria, and I'm concerned about the hidden mutual fund fees. I'm not sure why you don't want to do direct registration, but I think going direct is a great idea. The only dividend reinvestment schemes I know that I like are ones that I've seen that are private, and they're just not generally public. You have to sort of come along with them. Anyway, so I would much prefer to go direct rather than go through a mutual fund, although I think there are some good mutual funds, not perfect. Also, I think the stock is going to bring you the best long-term returns as long, again, as you're monitoring and keeping an eye on the company. Anyway, they say best regards and keep up the phenomenal work. You too. Sounds like you're doing great things. Catherine, in your annual wrap-up, you and Dr. Farrell were wondering about what was going on in Antarctica, and then I ran across this article. I thought you would want to see it. I definitely would want to see it. Thank you very much. It's the article, Massive Strange Anomaly Discovered Under the Frozen Ice of Antarctica. I really like what you're doing. Keep up the good work. Maybe things will get easier with the new administration. There's no doubt for me that things will be easier with this administration, or there's a 99% chance they'll be easier with this administration than would have been with the other administration. You know, there's no doubt that there were a group of us and some of our key allies who were looking for places abroad if in fact the other guys had won. So then somebody writes a very, very long memo, which I'm not going to read, about a recent book by Michael Shrimpton called Spy Hunter, talking about whether the German intelligence agency has infiltrated Western governments and intelligence agencies. My read is that all of our intelligence agencies are deep in it with everybody else. You know, we're all in each other's business. You know, so in that sense, yes, but everybody's doing it. I have Spy Hunter. I haven't read it. It's with the pile of 100 must-read books. So, and I would point out the great line from Leonard Cohen. First we take Manhattan, then we take Berlin. This sort of an allusion to the Nazis. So there's no doubt the Germans, you know, the Germans have been whooped by the Anglo-American alliance in World War I and World War II, and they have reason to fear us, not to mention that we have an army occupying their country. So would the German intelligence agency do all those things? You bet. I've seen lots of examples where I believe German intelligence was cooperating with American intelligence to do a variety of different things on American soil, and I bet that's going on too. Somebody writes from Argentina. Good morning, Catherine. I'm writing to you from sunny and warm Buenos Aires, Argentina. My 7-year-old son and Argentine husband moved here from California in 2012. I am born and raised in Switzerland of a Swiss mom and Persian Iranian dad. I'm a huge fan of yours and have been following your work since 2008. I think you're one of the smartest people I know besides Joseph Farrell, who is a super smart cookie himself. So I was wondering if you had any insights re the Argentine condition outlook. Last year's inflation hit 40%, which is unheard of in countries like the U.S. or Switzerland for that matter. It is worse than during the last years of the Kirchner administration, where the yearly unofficial inflation ran about 25%. The official data, which was produced in the office of INDEC, was always much lower, but everyone knew that this was a blatant lie. It was part of the reason why the Kirchnerismo lost during the last election. Macri promised to reduce the inflation, however, it just went into the opposite direction. Go figure. Lifting the currency controls and lifting the import restrictions had a horrible effect on the local economy overall. The other campaign slogan he had was zero poverty, which went totally the opposite way. In a survey of 27.2 million people in 31 urban areas, 8.8 million people, or 32.2%, were below the poverty line. Just over 6% qualified as indigent in the second quarter of 2016, according to the government statistic agencies. I really wish you would come over here to talk. And then she mentions three Argentinians and mentor educate them a bit. If you think this is possible, I would try to arrange a meeting. And since you would be already down here, you could also venture down to Antarctica. And in this case, maybe Joseph would join you too. Argentina probably got a tough time ahead. If you look at the three different scenarios, Argentina will be in good shape in the Popsicle Index Rising scenario. In the musical chair scenario, it's tough because you have Asia converging on per capita incomes and Latin America not. Now, you've got great food, and you're in the southern hemisphere, so you have many things going for you. But if you look at what the developed world can do with automation and other things, it means you're going to have to be more self-sufficient. And so it doesn't surprise me when you took off the local restrictions, things went down or went south. So I think you're in for tough times unless you gather under really good local leadership. So I think Argentina is in many respects a wonderful place to live, although I've never been there. I'm just basing it on what friends tell me. But who do live there. And I would love to come. I would love to come to Argentina. So if you're serious, let me know, and maybe we'll work on a plan. You've got to let me know when would be a good time to come to Argentina. And yes, I would love to dip down to Antarctica. Catherine, your 2016 annual wrap-up is superb in its depth, clarity, and practicality. Thank you so much for your earnest effort. It helps me with my investment allocations. Well, I'm glad to hear that because we have put extraordinary effort into it. And again, I would really recommend, if you haven't taken a look at the web presentation, I would really set aside some time and go through it. I think it's very informative. And as we say, the PDF will be ready in about 2 weeks. Have you read the book Song of Increase, Listening to the Wisdom of Honeybees for Kinder Beekeeping and a Better World, with your focus on food, humanity, and spirituality? I think you'll love this book. I have it. It's in the pile of 100 books I have to read. Also, I've heard you mention several times that you don't know who is right undecided about climate change due to both sides only hearing what supports their case. Have you read Ben Davidson's work at Suspicious Observers? Scroll down several videos to top 6 climate change problems. His pioneering work on solar activity affecting earthquakes and Earth's weather and personal health are well-researched. Sounds fascinating. Okay, we'll take a look. Please let me know when and where you'll be speaking in Palm Springs in April. It's not now, it's going to be closer to Los Angeles. It won't be Palm Springs. I'll be speaking on April 20th, and then hopefully we'll be doing a lunch. So I will keep you posted. Are you aware of this group this is a new comment. Are you aware of this group and their mission to restore the 28th Amendment? And then I won't read the whole thing. It's a group that is proposing that we redistrict congressional districts to a minimum of 50 or maximum of 50,000 people. So we'd end up with 6,000. I think the congressmen would sit at home and work remotely. So my focus is completely on enforcing the current Constitution, not changing it. I think the problem with the current Constitution is we're not enforcing it. And the key provision we're not enforcing is that that the government is not supposed to spend money that's not envisioned in an appropriation act. And I think the refusal of the government to obey that constitutional provision as well as obey the laws for financial management. So government has refused illegally to produce audited financial statements for now 20 years. So I don't even want to hear about changes in the Constitution. I want to hear about enforcement. That's where we ought to be putting our time and money. We have a covenant, and it's very, very important we keep that covenant. And my fear is a lot of well-meaning groups are pushing for different amendments, and those are all going to be used as an excuse to create a constitutional convention. And if you rip that up, as I described on the Jeff Renz show, we're talking about slavery. There is no doubt in my mind, if you watch that Aaron Rousseau video, what these guys want to do is microchip everybody and connect them, you know, to a digital financial system. And if you don't behave, they'll turn off your chip. So I think you rip up the Constitution and you're at that point, you're going towards a slavery system. So no, I am not interested in any amendments to the Constitution. I'm interested in enforcement of the Constitution because we need to get the missing money back. And the reality is crime that pays is crime that stays, and you can change the Constitution all you want. And if they can steal as much money as they want, no matter what we do, then it's not going to work. So I'm into enforcement. Dear Catherine, two terms that have been utilized for years now are neocon and neoliberal. Can you give us your own definition of what these two mean? I think I answered this the last time, but I'll say it again. Neo stands for not. So not conservative and not liberal, organized crime. So a neocon is not really conservative, they're organized crime, and a neoliberal is not really liberal, they're into organized crime too. Dear Catherine, if more and more countries began banning cash and requiring people to buy and sell everything digitally, what impact do you believe this would have on the price of gold? Could you even foresee a time when the sale of gold could become banned, with the stated purpose being to eradicate criminal activity? Of course. So all central control is bad for gold. Period. End of discussion. So the more control you have, the worse it is for gold. Of course, the danger is if India and China are basically pushed out of real bullion into paper in the form of ETFs or just simply into digital systems, then we've got a real serious problem. Because the thing that's holding a real floor under the price of gold is the tremendous retail demand coming as per capita incomes converge from Asia with the developed world. And again, I would look at that Aaron Rousseau video and make up your own mind. The reality is the central banks can function very well with gold. They don't care what the price is. They care how much you have. And so running a system where the price at retail is very different than the price at wholesale is fine with them, as long as you can make sure nobody can buy it, or the demand at retail at the low price is modest. Dear Catherine, I hear many owners and managers of businesses say that people from the millennial generation don't like to work hard and they don't like to work long hours. I'm assuming that this has all been intentionally programmed into the buyer educational system, and I wanted to get your opinion on this. I think there's a wide spectrum, but frankly, if I was their age and saw how the system worked, I would realize that it really wasn't in my best interests to get harvested by it. So I think they're intentionally interested in avoiding being harvested by the system. I would say it was a form of coping. But I also think there's a wide divergence in behaviors in the millennial generation. So, I hate to lump them into one group. Do you know a good silver fund like gold money? Gold money is not a fund. It's an online operation. So a fund usually refers to something, whether private or public, that is like a securities investment. So, but I'm assuming you're interested in something like gold money. I have not due diligenced any of the other firms that provide online access to ownership and deposit of gold. The one that I have due diligenced, we had on the Solaria Report several years ago. It's an Australian firm called ABC Bullion. The Perth Mint is also good, but the fees are much higher for an American, so it may not be cost economic. But what I will do is the next time we have Franklin Sanders on for the Precious Metals Report, I'll ask him if there's a good gold money equivalent. I just have not. I spent a tremendous amount of time at one point doing due diligence on gold money, and since then I just haven't had the opportunity to do any of the alternatives. Okay, that's it for this evening. Lots of questions. Next week, political control and pedophilia with John Rappaport. I'm very concerned that the Pizzagate pedophilia scandal may rise to the surface. I don't want, if that happens, I don't want you to not have the background to understand it. It's much more prevalent than people understand, and the control file system is what has got a lot of politicians and Washington acting completely ridiculous. If you watch John McCain, if you watch Lindsey Graham, if you watch Mario Rubio, you're watching the kind of behavior you get when people have threats from the intelligence agency or control files with things like pedophilia. As I said many times, I watched a cabinet secretary being blackmailed with what I believe now is pedophilia, and it's quite a sight to behold. Then February 16th, Why We Love Bach with Dr. Michael Linton. He got his PhD in Bach. He's been teaching Bach for many years. A real Bach expert and a great musician. He's got his own music company and has been a dear friend for many, many years. There's been a Bach revival in the Celerity Network inspired by the crowdfund. And it's got a lot of people asking why Bach is so special and why we like Bach. So we're going to take a really in-depth look at J.S. Bach. And then February 23rd, very interesting discussion with Dr. Laura Thompson, healthcare independence. I was asked by one of my allies to do this because they were watching friends and neighbors just be harvested by the traditional medical system. Really, what you see is that it is imperative if you live in the developed world to know how to get the best of holistic medicine and the best of traditional medicine. We have to know how to navigate both systems and get the best of both worlds. And people who know how to do that and get the best of both worlds really, it's amazing how much better their lives are than people who get, who don't know how to navigate and use those two systems together. So this was, as I said, inspired by people who are getting drained by and churned by the traditional medical system, and not knowing what to do. So we're gonna go through how to learn how to be healthcare independent and how to get the skills and knowledge you need to navigate both systems and use both well to your advantage, and certainly economically. One of the things I'm very focused on is you've got to be able to do it economically or it can really bankrupt you. Okay, so until February 9th next week with John Rappaport on political control and pedophilia. Please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.